sister was a Catholic girl. Loved the mass, I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning. While Mary looked up yearning, I got confirmed and I confessed. I really felt that I was blessed. Plus I love my uniform, so did the boy who lived next door. But something changed when I became of age, and all those things I thought were true, someday I'd break the big taboo. Oh, letting go, oh God.
Listening to WZO LP 103.9 FM live in Knoxville, Tennessee. And this is the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. I'm Doubter 5. This is an atheist call-in show, and we'll be talking about atheism, free thought, humanism, and rational thought. Okay. Conversely, we'll also talk about religion, religious faiths, gods, holy books, and superstition. Despite what Steve Martin would have you think, there are an awful lot of atheist songs. And we'll hear some of them right here on this program and generally on this station. We'll also be talking about rationalist and atheist groups that are here in Knoxville, Tennessee, and how you can connect with them. Did you know that there's an atheist television show broadcasting right here in Knoxville and has been for 6 years? This is a call-in show. If you'd like to call in and join us, the number here is 865-333-5937. We'll be happy to hear from you. The line is open. And if you have thoughts or concerns about the election, I do too. I have many concerns about it. The state of the nation after the election of Donald Trump to the presidency, and after the general taking over of the government by the conservative far right. Well, I have written a letter, an open letter to my daughter, to give her a little perspective on this. I've seen this all before. All of us old-timers have. If you think back to the old shows you've seen from the 40s and 50s, the all-white shows like Leave It to Beaver, the Ricky Nelson Show, Have Gun, Will Travel, etc., the only minorities you will see were in servant roles like Bonanza's Hop Sing, or entertainment roles like black musicians or dancers. And the only role for a woman was in the home. But the women's roles were changing even then, but really only for white women. Then the 60s happened. The progressives and conservatives were at each other's throats, blacks against whites, feminists against chauvinists. And if you have time, look up and watch some of the movies that from that time period that address the real problems. Easy Rider, Joe, Hair, To Kill a Mockingbird, Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, etc. There was great anger against the establishment. There were years of protests. Families broke up over it. People were leaving the country or being arrested and sent to jail. Look up the Ohio State shooting. YouTube has many protest videos from the 60s. Watching them will help you understand the feelings that you're having now watching all of this unfold. We oldsters may romanticize it, but it was not a pleasant time. It's where the whole hippie movement started, which was all about dropping out, refusing the draft, leaving the establishment behind. It was about free expression of speech and ideas, yes, like burning the flag, and minority rights. But then look at the 70s. It was a great time of healing, a time of progress and bad clothes. But it was also a time where you saw great advances in women's and minority rights and inclusion in the workplace. Entertainment, science, and medicine, which has been going on forever until now. But that's been 50 years of progress, 50 years before the conservative progressive pendulum has swung back to the right. Now is your time. You'll be telling your grandchildren about this struggle. Do take to the streets, but do it peacefully. You're not responsible for the actions of the conservatives who may verbally and sometimes physically abuse you. Stay strong. Keep your eyes on the goal. Remember the examples of Dr. King and Gandhi. You know what you want America to be, and the new generation, you, will make that happen. We oldsters will be by your side, but it's your energy and your determination that will carry the day. Remember, the rest of the world will not change with this election, and in Congress only the majority has changed. You still have many stalwart allies there. Dr. King said that the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice. This is your 60s. It's going to be a hard struggle, but progressives will carry the day. We have to. The human rights and individuals of the world over depend on it, and they will be fighting with you. Remember, the sword is forged in fire, and you will be too. Now we're going to take a break for music. I don't have any guests with me this time, so I'll be playing a few more songs than I usually do. This one is Atheist Funeral by Dan Sartain. Enjoy, and we'll be back in about 2.5 minutes.
We die, but I know. And we all must go to heaven or hell. But don't speak about God at my funeral, said.
That was Atheist Funeral by Dan Sartain. Many people, when they're talking to atheists, they will say that we have to believe in God because God is love and we believe in love. It just that one thing alone tells me they haven't read the Bible. One of the most persistent ideas that exists among believers is this idea that God is a loving parent figure, that God is love. Moreover, that he cares more about you than any human parent ever loved their child. Frankly, this is ridiculous. And you can know that because to know anything about this God, you have to read the Bible. And reading the Bible, we can easily see that this claim is ludicrous beyond imagining. Talk to any believer and they will insist that their holy book is God's word, either dictated directly to his prophets or inspired in such a way that we should be able to get a good idea of what God is like and what he wants. However, any casual reading of that text will demonstrate that the only thing that God wants from us is obedience at the cost of our lives. And the punishment doesn't stop at death. After death, you will then be forced to live on and endure unimaginable torture that literally never ends. The Old Testament is filled with instances after instance of God's dictatorious callousness toward his human creations. Starting with the cursing of Adam and Eve and all of their descendants for all of time, and then moving forward through every book from then on, sending fire and brimstone, plagues, armies, floods, and so on. He uses every means imaginable to kill us and or make us suffer. In Exodus, before he supposedly led the slaves out of Egypt, he hardened Pharaoh's heart so that he wouldn't let his people go. Exodus 9:12. Why would he do that? Apparently, it's so that he could be justified in unleashing his plagues on Egypt, ending thousands of innocent lives along with all the firstborn of the Egyptian families. God is love. Please. When Pharaoh did free his people and he led them out into the desert, does God lead them straight to the promised land? A trip would have only taken about 2-3 weeks. No, he leads them in circles out in the desert for 40 years. 40 years. Then he brings them inside of the promised land when Moses is about to die. Would any loving parent do something so heinous? When God is love, God, the God of love, brings his people to the promised land, does he tell them to assimilate in the population? Does he tell them to follow their customs and learn to live in peace with them? No, he admonishes them to wage war on all of the people of the new lands. I quote, "When the Lord your God brings you to the land that you are going to occupy and force out many of the nations before you, Hittites, Girgamites, Amorites, Canaanites, Perizzites, Hevites, and Jebusites, seven nations more powerful and numerous than you. And when the Lord thy God shall deliver them unto you, thou shalt smite them and utterly destroy them. Thou shalt make no covenant with them, show no mercy unto them." That's Deuteronomy 7, 1 and 2. There's no love there. When God floods the earth, it is because mankind has grown evil, theoretically. Really? Everyone? Every man, woman, child, baby, all of the animals? Why couldn't he just have snapped his fingers and blinked the evil ones out of existence? It's certainly within the power of an omnipotent being, but apparently he would rather drown every single living thing on the planet save one righteous family. Love? Doesn't sound like it. And no conceivable punishment is left out. God has reserved a special punishment for us in Deuteronomy 28, 53-58, which says that if we don't obey God's commandments, and we're talking about 613 commandments, we're not talking about the Ten Commandments. There are 613 commandments in the Bible, and this is what God is telling us that we have to obey, or he will bring us so low that we will have to eat our own children to survive. Deuteronomy 28, chapter 53, or verse 53 through 58. "Because of the suffering your enemy will inflict upon you if you don't obey the commandments, I will send enemies against you," is what he's saying. "And because of the suffering your enemies will inflict upon you during this siege, you will eat the fruit of the womb, the flesh of the sons and daughters the Lord your God has given you. Even the most gentle and sensitive man among you will have no compassion on his own brother or wife he loves or his surviving children. And he will not give to those, to one of them, any of the flesh of his children that he is eating. It will be all his and all he has left because of the suffering your enemy will inflict upon you during the siege of your cities. The most gentle and sensitive woman among you, so sensitive and gentle that she will not venture to touch the ground with the sole of her foot, will begrudge the husband she loves and her own son or daughter, the afterbirth from her womb and the children she bears. For in her dire need, she intends to eat them secretly because of the suffering of your enemy, and that what they will inflict upon you during the siege of your cities. If you do not carefully follow all of the words of this law," meaning the Bible, Leviticus, Deuteronomy, "which are written in this book, and do not revere the glorious and awesome name of the Lord your God." This is quoted directly from the Bible. This is what he's planning to do to you if you don't follow and obey all of the 613 commandments in the Bible. Even in the New Testament, Jesus, the meek and mild, relates a story where he compares himself to a king who says, "But those of mine enemies which would not that I should reign over them, bring them hither and slay them before me. Most of the things Jesus says in the New Testament are actual demands, or actually demands for obedience, and in this case, it is plainly obedience or death. What kind of love is that? Apart from demanding the death of those who don't follow him, Jesus at one point positively tells his disciples in Luke 14:25-26 that you have to hate your family to be his follower. Quote, And there went great multitudes with him, and he turned and said unto him, If any man come to me and hate not his father, his mother, his wife, his children, and brethren and sister, and yea, even his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. This is the kind of thing you hear from a cult leader. That is, if your family doesn't join the cult with you, then you have to leave them. But he goes even farther to say that you have to hate them as well. That God is love is plainly laughable, even when using today's examples. How often do you hear Christians say that Jesus is looking out for that lady? She was a good Christian, so she didn't die in that car crash. But by their own admission, since God is responsible for all things, especially life and death, God used the car crash to kill the rest of the victims and just didn't get that last one. No mention is ever made of them except by inference that they must not have been good Christians, which promotes the blame the victim mentality. Parents today tell their children that because of God's infinite love, God or Jesus or an angel is looking out for them. But then terrible things still happen to them anyway, sometimes at the hand of the very people who are supposed to represent God here on earth. This callousness on the side of God was, in my opinion, best put by Tracy Harris of the Atheist Experience of Austin, Texas, when she said, quote, If I could stop a person from raping a child, I would, and that's the difference between me and your God, end quote. And no, murderer or rapist's free will is not more important than a person's life or a child's innocence. Of course, all of this makes perfect sense if you realize that there is no God, and that the Bible is a book actually written to demand obedience, not to a God, but to a non-existent God's self-appointed human representatives. Throughout time, there has been no lack of example of man's cruelty to his fellow man when driven by religion. The Crusades, the Inquisition, the crimes of Mormon migration to Utah, the Jonestown Massacre, and the multitude of other wars and religious atrocities shows that man will not stop at any demand for obedience, since it means riches and power for those who can cope and dupe others into obeying them in the name of God. Please, examine your beliefs closely. If you haven't read the Bible, do it now, or the Torah, or the Quran, or, yes, this is an atheist telling you to read your holy books. But don't gloss over these examples of callousness toward humans. Keep your mind on the fact that God is supposed to be an all-loving being, or indeed love itself. I seriously doubt you'll come away strengthened in your faith. And we're getting down toward the bottom of the hour. So I'm going to mention or play a couple of advertisements or information, audio messages about the rationalists of East Tennessee and the Atheist Society of Knoxville. And then I'll play a song called Darwin's Acid, and I'll see you after that.
If you live in or around the Knoxville area and are questioning your religious beliefs or simply believe in one less God than everyone else, well, you're not alone. The Atheist Society of Knoxville is a fun and friendly group of people just like you that meets twice a week at a bar or restaurant. We meet every Tuesday night following the show at Barley's Tap Room and Pizzeria for happy hour. You'll find our group either inside or on the patio. Look for Richard Dawkins' silver-jacketed book, The God Delusion, standing upright on the table. But if you plan to preach, prophetize, provoke, or punch, please don't. We all question what we believe at one point in our lives. If this is the time for you, come join us for food, drink, conversation, and fun.
In 1859, Darwin spilled the first splashes of his universal acid, and the effects were like magic, burning human arrogance into ashes, in pretty much the same way that Copernican math did. No, the stars don't shine just to improve the view from Earth. No, we're not the center of the universe. No, we weren't created in the image of Jupiter. No, we're not so special. And yes, the truth hurts. But that's how evolution works. Once it's been applied, the acid burns its way into the superstitious side of the human mind and fills it with light. It even dissolves the original sin of pride. That pride that says, I'm a special creation, and my creator has given me dominion over nature, and he has the power to replenish his creatures. So if species go extinct, well, he can recreate them later. And if he doesn't, well, that's just part of his plan. Ah, but Darwin's acid is hard to withstand. It plucks the arrogance deep from within the hearts of man, and teaches us never to build our houses on sand, but instead to try to understand why we're here. Just one species among millions in this biosphere, with millions of ancestors behind us, whose fighting spirits combine to give us this great survival gear. These minds, these limbs, these incredible tools, perfected by millennia of competitive use. And yes, these attention-seeking genitals, too. Without them, these human forms could never improve. It's such an elegant view, filled with breadth and grandeur. And yet some people react with depression and anger and say it's so unsympathetic, it's so viciously random. What's the point of compassion or ethical standards if this is all just a game that these organisms are trapped in, genetically adapting to environmental factors? Then there's no responsibility for individual actions. It's nihilistic. Where's the governing dynamic? Well, once again, Darwin gives us some answers. He says, yes, everything from violets to violence to viruses, it's all just organisms adapting to environments. If you're alive, it's because your ancestors were the best survivalists. They were the finalists in the genetic Olympic Games. Every one of your ancestors survived to reproductive age, and they were all better than their competitors at getting laid. Otherwise, you just wouldn't be sitting here today. Some say it's cynical, but I find something inspirational in this vision of Darwin's, and it goes like this. Organisms are not isolated. Organisms are part of the environmental mix, so your decisions affect evolution. It isn't directionless. Now, before you dismiss me as a mad environmentalist, just try to imagine how natural selection applies to countries that have industrialized. Companies live and companies die. And when customers buy based on a company's green plan, that affects the economy. Just ask Alan Greenspan. See, cultural evolution is ours to reinvent. Wait, can we affect current events? Yes, we can. And when we choose who to sleep with and reproduce, our sexual choices affect the gene pool. So it's simple. All we need to do is refuse to sleep with mean people, and things will improve. Especially women. On you, the pressure is greater, because men will always do what it takes to get into your favor. That's just in our nature. So if selfish behavior was a sexual graveyard, the effects would be major. In each of these cases, our intentional efforts can play the part of environmental pressures. I can say this is a space where a peaceful existence will never be threatened by needless aggression. I can say this is an ecosystem where people listen, where justice increases over egotism. I can say this is a space where religions achieve coexistence and racism decreases with each coalition. This is my vision of Darwinism and how we factor in. Each of us is a part of the environment. We all pass through it and then we change it and affect the way that other people adapt to it. And afterwards, we get to look back and see how we impacted it and maybe have a laugh if our sense of humor is still alive. And what did Charles Darwin do? Darwin threw some light on the origins of mankind. And he left us with Stuart pride. But he taught us that, yes, there's grandeur in this view of life. There is grandeur in this view of life, and the fact that it also happens to be true is nice. But I can't say it as well as Mr. Charles Darwin. So come on, let's hear your version. marginless. There is grandeur in this view of life, with its several powers having been originally breathed into a few forms or into one. And that whilst this planet has gone cycling on according to the fixed law of gravity, from so simple a beginning, endless forms, most beautiful and most wonderful, have been and are being evolved.
Find stories of talking snakes laughable? Do you prefer the scientific method over supernatural beliefs? Are you concerned about religious leaders and organizations imposing their values and rules on your body, your family, and the rest of our society? Well, take comfort in the fact that you're not alone. The Rationalists of East Tennessee meets weekly for fellowship and provides a forum for people who support skeptical thinking and rational discussion of these and other issues. To find out more information or to find out about our next meeting, visit us on the web at www.rationalist.org.
And we're back. See, many times when I talk to Christians, you'll hear them say that Jesus is the answer, often when you haven't even asked them a question. And when the subject of evolution comes up, they'll ask you how, you'll ask them how they think humans are out of this earth, and they'll simply say, God. However, when you tell them that God isn't an answer because it brings up more questions than it answers, they give you the deer in the headlight look, saying, huh? I believe it's because they're brought up believing in one particular God, a one particular sect of religion, and have not taken the time or effort to look at the big picture. They don't see that people all over the world worship a thousand gods just as strongly as they worship theirs, some even willing to kill or die for theirs. And that's not counting those that killed or died for the thousands of gods that were worshipped throughout history before today. So what's the first question that has to be answered? Which God? Say this to them and you get another deer look. However, there are hundreds of more questions about their God that are just begging to be answered. Where did this God come from? Does it have parents? Are the parents still alive? Does it have a gender? How long has it been around? Is there a race of these gods? Where do they live? Why can't we see them? Are they all in this universe, or do they all have their own particular universes? Why did they create this universe? Why did they create any particular universe? Why did they make the most of the universe? Why did they make most of this universe deadly to humans if people were so important to them? Why did they wait so long, 14 billion years, before even adding people to that universe? Where is heaven? Where is hell? Are there other things, places where souls can go to after death? It goes on and on and on. God begs hundreds, if not thousands, of questions. And these questions never seem to enter their mind. It may just be because they were dealt with at a very early age. Any parent knows that if you have to answer all kinds of questions about God from preschool children, and those were handled at that stage, problem over. By the time they're ready for school, they have a pretty good idea of what their particular God's characteristics are or supposed to be. And many times he looks, sounds, and acts a lot like Santa Claus. If you think about it, Yahweh looks a lot like Santa Claus to adults, too. But what about the older, more philosophical questions that have been with us for a long time? Why did God let evil enter the world? Why does God allow sickness? Why does God let bad things happen to good people? And why does he hide? One of the biggest questions about God was put forward by Socrates. Do the gods love good actions because it is good, the action? Or is good action good because it is loved by the gods? Call the Euthyphro dilemma. It can be put another way. Does God create morality, or does he just pass this information along to us? If the gods create morality, then whatever they say is good, and they can just change their minds tomorrow. But if good exists aside from the gods, and he just passes it along, then God is just the messenger, and we could theoretically figure it out on our own without him. Apparently, the God of the Christian Bible, Yahweh, decided to change his behavior and his definition of good from the Old to the New Testament? What if he decided tomorrow to go back to his old self and put out a third and newer testament that demanded we keep slaves again? What if he said that instead of foreskins, we had to cut off our little fingers or our noses in order to keep the sin of pride at bay? Or what if he said that we had to keep no less than 3 wives at a time? Would that now be good? And how would we know it was the true God? If we hear a voice in our head and it tells us to do bad things like it did with Abraham, shouldn't we just question that voice and say, this is not a God telling me to do bad things. This must be a demon or a devil. God itself, the concept God, is not an answer. It is a question. It's 1,000 questions. All religions say that they have answered those questions, but what they all put forward is conflicting evidence in the shape of their holy books. And those holy books are anecdotal evidence from the uneducated, pre-scientific people who thought that demons caused illness and that curses and magic were real. And in the case of Christianity, that witches and gays should be hunted down and killed. The only method that we have to get real, actual answers about the universe is science. It is in the unlikely event that a claim of religion was to be shown to be true, that it would still have to be confirmed so by science. And so far, those examples have been rare indeed. Okay, I'm going to play another song. This is The Unbroken Thread by the Symphony of Science. Enjoy.
Let's take a trip to examine this common basis of life, a voyage to investigate the molecular machinery at the heart of life on Earth.
All life is related, and it enables us to construct with confidence the complex tree that represents the history of life. Our planet, the Earth, is, as far as we know, unique in the universe. It contains life. Here, plants and animals proliferate in such numbers that we still have not even named all the different species. Darwin's great insight revolutionized the way in which we see the world. We now understand why there are so many different species.
Every cell is a triumph of natural selection, and we're made of trillions of cells. In us is a little universe. Those are some of the things that molecules do. Given 4 billion years of evolution, we are, each of us, a multitude.
Now, how did the molecules of life arise?
It began in the sea some 3,000 million years ago. Complex chemical molecules began to clump together.
These were the seeds from which the tree of life developed. They were able to split, replicating themselves as bacteria.
The secrets of evolution are time and death. There's an unbroken thread that stretches from those first cells to us. The secrets of evolution are time and death. There's an unbroken thread that stretches from those first cells to us. Every cell is a triumph of natural selection, and we're made of trillions of cells. In us is a little universe. Those are some of the things that molecules do. Given 4 billion years of evolution, we are, each of us, a multitude.
There isn't a sharp line dividing humans from the rest of the animal kingdom. It's a very wuzzy line. It's a very wuzzy line. It's getting wuzzier all the time. We find animals doing things that we, in our arrogance, used to think was just human. It's a very wuzzy line, and it's getting wuzzier all the time.
every cell is a triumph of natural selection, and we're made of trillions of cells. In us is a little universe. Those are some of the things that molecules do. Given 4 billion years of evolution, we are each of us a multitude. Every cell is a triumph of natural selection, and we're made of trillions of cells. In us is a little universe.
Our planet, the Earth, is, as far as we know, unique in the universe. It contains life. Its continued survival now rests in our hands.
And we're back. This is WOZOLPFM 103.9, live in Knoxville, Tennessee. This is the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. I'm Larry Rhodes, or Doubter 5. This is WOZO Radio. Be sure to look on the App Store and find the WOZO Radio app so you can listen to us online. You can also go to WOZOradio.com and listen to us there. And that's all for the radio show. By the way, this radio show is every Sunday at 6 o'clock, 6 to 7, on 103.9 on your radio dial, or listen to us online. The Atheist Society of Knoxville and the Rationalists of East Tennessee also have a TV show that you can call in. It's a public access TV show. It's called Free Thought Forum, and you can watch it on Comcast Channel 12 every Tuesday at 6 o'clock. That's from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock. I've got my time is mixed up here. So it starts at 5, goes to 6, and you can call in and talk to real live atheists just like you can here on this show. If you want to call this show, it's 333-5937. That's 333-5937, area code 865. But also be sure to tune in on Comcast Channel 12 on Tuesdays, 5 o'clock, for Free Thought Forum. Right after the show, Free Thought Forum on Tuesdays, you can go down to the Old City and actually sit down and converse and have dinner and have a beer and conversation with some of your favorite atheists. We usually get together every Tuesday about 5:30 to about 8 o'clock in Barley's Tap Room and Pizzeria in the Old City of Knoxville. And if anybody is welcome, but if you plan to preach, proselytize, provoke, or punch, please don't. Just come down, sit down, and have a wonderful conversation. We do guarantee good conversation. If you find that lacking in your life, skip on down. Okay, that's all for the promotional stuff. If you are listening to the show and you're a regular listener, if you're an atheist or an agnostic, and you're still passing as a believer because of the company that you keep, the Bible belt that you live in, the job that you have. I've written an article about coming out of the atheist closet. I'd like to go into that a little bit now. If you have come to the realization that you just don't believe in God anymore, or that the stuff that religion passes out as truth, no longer really reflects reality, then you have a decision to make, whether or not you're going to let your friends, family, and or co-workers know that you no longer believe. First of all, let's talk about why some people come out of the atheist closet at all. I mean, why not just continue to pretend to believe? Some people come out of the closet because they have they can no longer live a lie and refuse to be dishonest with themselves and their loved ones any longer. Sometimes they come out because they believe that to stay in the closet and still pretend to believe would just provide support for and legitimize the religious dogmas as they see that are ruining the country that they love. Also, they may see that some preachers, pastors, and priests are using religion to take advantage of people around them, especially children, the elderly, and the infirm. They feel that they must come out and speak out against supernatural belief in order to delegitimize the charlatans. Whatever your reason, no two deconversions are alike. There are no hard and fast rules. but you can benefit from the advice of people who have come out ahead of you, and which may save you a lot of pain in the process. Rule number one, however, is never to out somebody against their wishes. It's their life, and they're the only ones who can evaluate the potential problems and harm that they will face if their family, friends, and co-workers knew that they numbered themselves among the most hated minority in America. That said, the following steps are for adults who are comfortable with their disbelief. We will talk about teens later. 1. Interact with the skeptical community. Go online and talk with other skeptics on chat pages or comment on the atheist videos on YouTube. Find and join free thought meetup groups in your area, online and at Meetup. Remember, you can do some of these anonymously or under a pseudonym if you'd prefer. You may find that people there have already made that journey and may be able to help you with yours. When you do decide that the time is right for you to let people know that you no longer believe, remember the old KISS rule. Just keep it simple. Don't make it a big thing. A lot depends on you and your attitude as you do it. That is, a passing comment is better than a major announcement. Show respect for others just as you would want them to show respect for you. You may not respect their beliefs per se, but respect them as people and as the people that you have come to know and love. Come out of the closet to your friends first to get some experience under your belt before coming out to your family and coworkers. Make sure that they understand that the conversation is confidential. Be aware that you will be questioned on your reasons for non-belief. Believers like to cite 1 Peter 3:15. Be ever ready to give the reasons for your belief, and they will expect no less from you for your disbelief. Know why you dismiss belief in a supernatural God, and be prepared to discuss and defend it at length. Read and reread books on Christian counter-apologetics. Listen to atheist podcasts and watch free thought videos. I would recommend coming out to your coworkers next. Of course, there's more risk there, but you have to be the judge of that. Again, don't make it a big thing. Just mention it in passing when it comes up in conversation, but don't bring it up. Just like you wouldn't like to have religion brought up at work, respect your coworkers who probably don't want to hear about your non-belief at work as well. However, if they do bring it up, it's only natural that you would want to state your view on the subject. And just like you wouldn't want to be proselytized by your religious co-workers, don't push it on others. In most instances, it will be against company policy and against very many federal laws to be fired just because of your religious beliefs or lack of them. Just keep track of what is said to you and any actions taken during this time. If they do fire you, that information could be invaluable in making your case in a court of law. Be sure to contact the ACLU or the FFRF if that happens. Many times they will provide a much needed and free legal help in these matters. And finally, come out to your family. Let them know that you got your open-mindedness, honesty, and integrity from them. You have to be true to your beliefs just as they are true to theirs. Remind them that you haven't believed for a while and that you're the same person that you've always been. And you're not stating for a fact that God doesn't exist. That might anger them and would put them on the defensive. But just rather say that you can't buy the claims of religion anymore. Atheism simply means non-belief in a God, that's all. Then give them time to assimilate the information and try to keep a good relationship with them if possible. Be firm, though. Make sure that they know that you demand the same respect for you as a person that they demand for themselves. Regardless of religious beliefs or lack thereof, you can demand respect for yourself as a person and earn it. You are an adult and a citizen. It is your right to believe or not believe as your conscience dictates. Just as much as they have the right to their beliefs simply advise them that you will not relinquish your right to behold your own beliefs. The above steps apply mostly to adults whose job is not dependent upon belief. Like if you're working at a very religious corporation like Chick-fil-A or I can name two or three, I won't. Your job may very well be dependent on your belief. And I can understand if you don't want to come out to your employer at that point. However, if you work for a religiously zealous employer that may fire you for your atheism, you may find that your honesty is worth as more than your job was worth. You may have to move on and find a job whose boss respects you for yourself and your talents, and not some coerced statements of false belief. Draw courage from those who have gone before and the fact that you will no longer have to live a lie. Now we get back to teenagers, which are a special case. Coming out of the atheist closet may be much more problematic for you than if you are a legal adult with a job and a place of your own. If your parents are extremely religious, or if you believe they are capable of violence or throwing you out in the street, then don't come out of the closet until you're out of the house and able to support yourself. You will then have the rest of your life to live free of religion and speak out against religious atrocities. However, if your parents hardly ever go to church or are from different religions, it may be easier to talk to them about your atheism. Even then, though, they may very well say that you're going through a phase. If it helps them to think so, that's fine. They're all going through phases all of our life. There's nothing to say that you won't change your mind later. People do it all the time. At least the conversation will have been initiated. There's another special case besides teenagers, atheist ministers. Preachers are automatically fired if and when they come out of the atheist closet. You will need to have another source of income lined up before you can come out. Some of the options available to you would be minister for the Unitarian Universalist Church, human relations manager or counselor, or you could write columns for magazines or newspapers or even books. If this is you, or if you know a preacher who is still in the pulpit, but who is also seriously questioning their beliefs, have them email Dan Barker of the FFRF. He and Dan Dennett have started a project called the Clergy Project, with several active ministers who honestly doubt or who can no longer believe at all. And I'm sure they would want to hear from you. They may also be able to offer you more options than those listed above. Also, go on YouTube and look for a video called Daniel Dennett and Dan Barker on Ministers Who Are Closet Atheists, or do a Google search for atheist ministers. Loss of emotional support when leaving church. Many people feel that leaving religion leaves a large gap in your lives, in their lives. Their community of believers has been a source of comfort and emotional support for them for much of their lives. Some have just come to like the weekly pomp and ceremony of church services. Again, I would recommend joining a church that welcomes secular viewpoints like the Unitarian Universalists or the new kid on the block, the Sunday Assembly. And yes, there's a Sunday Assembly here in Knoxville. Just do a search for it. I would also recommend searching for and joining meetup groups such as a Free Thought or Atheist group for the emotional support they offer. You can find them easily on the web at www.meetup.com. If you can't find one in your area, then start one, even if it's using a pseudonym. I have a friend who has done just that. If you'd like to read about other people's deconversion experiences, visit positiveatheism.org or go to Positive Atheism's page on deconversion stories, or do what I do. Just go on YouTube and search for Coming Out Atheists. Good luck and welcome to a large and growing group who are unafraid, nay, proud, to wear the title Atheist. Now I'm going to play God Said by David Anthony, and we'll be back in a few minutes to sign off. Glad to have you with us.
Christy, something happened a long time ago in Haiti, and people might not want to talk about it. They were under the heel of the French, and they got together and swore a pact to the devil. They said, we will serve you if you'll get us free from the French. Mm. True story. And so the devil said, okay, it's a deal. Ever since, they have been cursed.
I'm shaping my imaginary friend. See the trouble he gets in can't be traced back to me. Oh, he can pretend at the slightest of his whim. He has the power to suspend all rules of morality. And when he gets angry, he can make a lightning strike. He can help me win the fight with his power. Yes, he speaks to me, and it's always positive, 'cause I can just ask for forgiveness and it's over. So you can't put the blame on me. I'm doing what God said. What God said. What God said. Don't you put the blame on me. I'm doing what God said. What God said. What God said.
So you're praying for the death of the President of the United States. Do you think it's appropriate to say something like that? Or
I'm not saying anything. What I'm doing is repeating what God is saying.
In the name of the one who made us all, I will hide behind these walls from my enemies. By the power bestowed from up above, I will conquer you because it is my destiny. And with the righteous hand, I will bring you to your knees. I will strip you of your freedom without mercy. And when the earth quakes and the blood runs in the sand, there will be no final stand for the unworthy. So you can't put the blame on me. I'm doing what God said. What God said. What God said. Don't you put the blame on me. I'm doing what God said. What God said. What God said. I stand on a mountaintop on a solid rock. I stand upon this truth and I won't be moved. I stand, and when I come to claim my victory, so you can't put the blame on me. I'm doing what God did. What God did. What God did. And he speaks to only me. I know what God did. What God did. What God
And that was God Said by David Anthony. This is the Digital Free Thought Radio Show. We're here every Sunday at 6 o'clock. Hope you'll check in with us next time. This is WOZOLP 103.9 FM live here in Knoxville, Tennessee. And I leave you with a song about the entrenched misogyny of religion. It's Shelley Siegel and Eve. And remember, we'll see you next week. Remember, everybody is going to some other religion's hell. And now, Shelley, you may go.
The Bible tells me I was made for and from man. And I must do for him everything that I can. I must surrender to his will, yeah. I must submit. I can't make the household decisions, 'cause I am unfit. It tells me my place with everlasting grace. Bible tells me I must be silent to can't hear my voice. My role has been divinely defined, and I have no other choice. I may not be a teacher of men. I must cover up my shame. These are the laws of the one who in vain I cannot name. He tells me my place. pure, you cannot touch me. And it has nothing to do with where I've been. It is part of who I am. It is because I corrupt men. I was asking for it just by being a woman. He tells me my place with everlasting grace. Am I punishment for wanting to learn? It's a painful birth from which I may not return. The Bible tells me I was made for and from man. I must do for him everything that I can. I must surrender to his will, yeah. I must submit. I can't make the household decisions, cause I am unfit. It tells me my place, whatever.